So Susan and other scientists are helping us understand exactly what conditions are like on the surface of Mars. But if you actually want to send a space probe and explore there, or indeed any planet in the solar system, then you need to know what your probe's capable of surviving and what the conditions are going to be like when you get there. So here's how scientists do that with Meera Senthilingam. Sorry, go on, Chris, you're going to save me now, aren't you?
With Meera Senthilingam.
Thank you very much.
This week, I've come down to the labs of the Planetary and Space Sciences Research Institute at the Open University in Milton Keynes. But it's not your average kind of lab, as there isn't a white bench or a white coat in sight. There are large metal vessels all over the room, really, with circular windows, basically looking like mini spaceships all over the place. I'm here with Martin Towner, who's a research fellow here at the Open University, and he's going to tell me what these vessels are really here for.
Yes, these chambers all get used to simulate conditions on other planets in the solar system. This particular area is mainly to do with the testing and building of instruments. So we have a whole bunch of different chambers to simulate the different environments that spacecraft have to go through on their way to get to Mars or to get to Titan and to land and survive for a period of time. The majority of our work is simulating the Mars conditions for upcoming future missions.
What is the environment like on Mars?
Mars is very different from the Earth. The atmosphere is a lot thinner than Earth's and is also CO2, carbon dioxide, rather than oxygen and nitrogen like we have here. It's also a lot colder. A nice sunny day on the equator on Mars might get up to just above freezing, whereas a cold winter night time you might be talking minus 120 degrees centigrade. The sunlight is also very different. Mars is further from the Earth, so the light is a bit dimmer, but it's also a lot harsher because there's no ozone layer around Mars, so you have a stronger UV ultraviolet on the surface. On Earth, the burn time on a bad day is, you know, half an hour, whereas on Mars, you're talking a couple of minutes. It'd probably be the least of your worries if you were on the surface, but the ultraviolet is so strong that it effectively sterilizes the surface of the planet.
But how do you know that these are definitely the conditions?
Well, in most of the cases, they've actually been measured. You know, there have been spacecraft that have landed on Mars. They've measured the temperature, the wind speed, the air pressure. So we actually have data for that. There are big climate models in the same way that people do climate modelling on the Earth. People do climate models for Mars as well. So the global conditions are understood. Things like the ultraviolet flux is less well known, but can be modelled because you know the composition of the atmosphere. You know how far away from the sun you are. So you can work out all these things.
We've got all these chambers here in which you try to recreate these conditions. So how do you go about doing that?
Well, because of the low pressure on Mars, you have to have a big metal chamber that you can take the air out of and then fill it with the Mars atmosphere. So you have a big pump connected to a big metal chamber. And this one is about 2 meters long, about 1 meter diameter. Pump all the air out, fill it with a little bit of carbon dioxide, which gives us the atmosphere. We have a bunch of big lamps inside, which can be switched on and off by a computer to give us the day-night cycle, because the Mars day is slightly longer than the Earth day.
What kind of lamps?
Ultraviolet lamps, and then also a normal light bulb type lamp, which gives us the visible spectrum as well as the ultraviolet, because we need both. Temperature is done using liquid nitrogen through a big copper plate. Liquid nitrogen will get us down to below minus 150, which covers the worst case on Mars, and then we control that to bring it up and down to do the day-night cycle or to simulate different areas of Mars, equator, North Pole, South Pole, things like that.
Do you put all of these conditions in one go in each chamber, or do you look at different things in each chamber?
No, the chambers tend to be specialised. I mean, for people studying astrobiology, like life on Mars, they want a small, nice, clean chamber. They may not be interested in the light. They might just want it cold and dark because they're studying things that are underground. Whereas if someone is doing more physical processes like wind and sand blowing around, they may want a great big chamber so that the air has got space to move, but they might not be too interested in getting the absolute coldest temperatures because things like wind-blown sand is not really dependent on whether it's minus 20 or minus 50.
But why is it important? What kind of effects do these conditions have on the instruments in the first place for you to have to study this so much?
Mainly it's the temperature, especially when it gets very cold at night and then a little bit warmer during the day. You repeat this day after day after day, and it just starts to have wear and tear on the instrument, on the joints, on the soldering and the electronic components in the instruments, and also things like the battery as well. You also have to be very careful with the lighting. Things like plastics and stuff tend to degrade under strong ultraviolet conditions.
So how do you overcome this?
It's the old adage of test, test and test again, basically. I mean, you have to pick the right materials so that they don't crack or fade or bend or just creep slowly under these conditions. This also affects the accuracy of the instruments as well, which you have to measure so that somebody will know that their instrument works equally well at minus 60 as it does at minus 20 in the middle of the day or in the middle of the night as well. So you just have to work your way through all the different combinations of instruments and environment conditions and then weed out anything that doesn't make the grade and replace it maybe with a better material or a better design.
Survival of the fittest.
Yes, basically.
Is there nowhere on Earth that you could maybe go to try and get these conditions naturally?
There are some places that are close. The Antarctic dry valleys are the one that people traditionally use. It's very cold, very dry. Because of the conditions, you get a strong ultraviolet from the sun, but you don't get the right atmosphere. You know, you're still trapped in the Earth's atmosphere. And at a practical level, doing fieldwork to Antarctica and taking all your instruments out there is actually a lot more expensive than just building a chamber in the lab and testing them there.
And there was me thinking, Phil, that Cambridge was quite a harsh environment as well. I don't need to build a posh lab facility. That was Martin Towner, by the way, from the Open University. He was explaining to Mira Senthilingam how he puts probes through their paces on distant planets, but without having to actually leave the lab.
And still to come, we'll be finding out more about the Phoenix mission itself and what we hope to learn from it. Also, how a chance collision in the asteroid belt that lies just beyond Mars produces a meteor that actually probably did it for the dinosaurs, so 65 million years ago.
Thanks very much, Phil. If you'd like to join in the show, you can email chris@thenakedscientists.com.
The Naked Scientists. Brought to you by thenakedscientists.com.